Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Makaitis.
Hello, and thanks so much for joining us here for episode 325 with Lauren Zander. Lauren is one of the few life coaches who have pitched me that I said, yes, that looks like really good stuff you have to share. And share she did. So you'll learn one, how to separate yourself from your recurring mental patterns. Two, the best communication approach during a worst case scenario. And three, the ways you lie and what that costs you. So if you'd like to take a look at the show notes or the transcript or the links to items we've referenced here, it's over at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep325. Now here's Lauren's story. Lauren Handel Zander is the co-founder and chairwoman of Handel Group, an international corporate consulting and life coaching company. Her coaching methodology, the Handel Method, is taught in over 35 universities and institutes of learning around the world, including MIT, the Stanford Graduate School of Business, NYU, and the New York City Public School System. Lauren is also the author of Maybe It's You, Cut the Crap, Face Your Fears, and Love Your Life, a no-nonsense practical manual that helps readers figure out not just what they want out of life, but how to actually get there. She spent over 20 years coaching thousands of private and corporate clients, including executives at Vogue, BASF, and AOL. Lauren has been featured in the New York Times, BBC, Forbes Women's Health, Dr. Oz, and Marie Claire, and is a regular contributor to Business Week and the Huffington Post. Quick note, somehow something went a little funky with this recording, and there are some gaps and skips. We tighten them up as much as possible, but you might notice that the quality is not as amazing as we shoot for each week. So apologies for that, but still great content. I want to make sure you got a chance to hear. And it's pretty good, just not as outstanding as we like it. So with that said, here is Lauren. Lauren, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of fun in this conversation. And so I wanted to get started. You know, you unabashedly refer to yourself as a life coach in your bios. And sometimes that has a bad rap or a jab associated with it. So I'd love it if maybe you could orient us. You've probably heard it all. What are some jokes or stereotypes or razzes you've gotten? And how do you think about it? And and how do you break the stereotype?
Well, first of all, I have been offered or recommended many, many times to bail from the name life coach.
Oh, right.
Completely. For like the amount of companies over the, 15 years that have been like, leave. So I decided I was still going to lead the way, right? So I feel like I helped lead the way. And so then the lines start to roll out, something has to be hard. Right. It's okay that there's a lot of different quality of everything. Like everything is not created equal. So neither is this field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You wouldn't go to all chiropractors. And once upon a time, there were the ones that were remarkable that made people understand it was a worthy way to deal with your body. Right. So it's pioneering. It's a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I'm with you. Well, it's funny. Well, even as I was looking at your publicity pieces, I was like, but there's really a lot of substance here.
Yeah.
Not that I should be surprised. You're right. It's a mixed bag. I've had coaches and done coaching, and it's been extraordinarily transformationally wonderful. And there have been other instances where it's just sort of like, really? What?
Right.
And I think it's sort of like, lawyers, I guess, can have a reputation as, oh, there's so many lawyer jokes out there, what do you call 10,000 lawyers at the bottom of an ocean?
Yeah.
A good start. Are there life coach jokes? I don't know if I've heard them explicitly articulated.
No, there's just digs like, oh, yes, they did a weekend and now they're a life coach.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she's 24. She's a life coach.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, can someone explain how that age could have a life enough to coach one? I don't think anyone's trying to be funny.
Okay. I hear you. It's all hard at elbows.
It's sharp and potentially accurate.
Okay. Well, anyway, you bring the goods. And one really cool thing about you is, so you have the Handel Method.
Yes.
And from that emerged a Design Your Life course that has been smashingly popular and effective over at MIT. So could you just share a little bit of that story for what is the Handel Method and how did this story unfold?
So I've been a coach since I was 28, 29. And so now I'm 48. So it's been a really long time. And I started having many clients and then repeat perform, like, what am I doing? And then I needed to understand what I was doing. And then I wanted to be able to teach it to someone else. Like, if I really had something, I wasn't just this unicorn, right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like some weird animal that was a one hit, like I could do it, but nobody else could. And so it was very important to me to figure out how to turn it into material that anyone could understand, and tools, right? And conversations and philosophy. Like, it had to have all of that mm-hmm. in order for it to be something that could exist. It needs to be able to be reproduced, and it has to be engaging and great and work. Like, it has to be amazing, right? And so because I had a relationship with a professor who I coached, and I coached him to get into MIT. I'm like, let me prove I exist. Let me show you what I do. And then can I do it there? And I really want to turn it into a methodology. And it's even true that I developed it at MIT, and they own 1%, right? Because I did all the development of the actual content there, even though I'd been doing it for years already before I started there.
What percent do they own?
1%. They already signed it back. Right? It's, you know, it's like, you know, on some level they, you know, it's 1%.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's adorable.
Okay, it's adorable. That's good language for a contract term. It's adorable.
It's like, it makes me very, it was like one of my very early wins. Like, someone wants to own what I'm doing.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, so I imagine, you know, it's a whole course, so there's a lot behind it, but could you give us a little bit of sort of the high points for the foundational elements? You know, I've got a sheet of paper with everything I want out of life. And so if I'm designing my life, I imagine that's a step in it. And then what else do I do there?
Basically, I am changing the framework of how to think about life and answer questions or figure out your answers, what you really want in your life, along with a variety of other things, right? It's not just that. So the first section of the homework, and then a whole philosophy off of each of the three main sections, is I break life out into 12 different areas, and I teach you and tell you to write a dream in each of the 12.
Mm-hmm.
And MIT was hysterical because they're like, I never thought of these other areas of life. Right? There's only three in my life, right?
There's research and...
right? They eat, they get laid, and they work, right? And they have a family, right? That was kind of it. That was it, right? And so the concept that you should have a vision and an understanding of your whole life or desires for your whole life through this area of your life, like if you haven't sat down and really thought about it and really figured out what you want, how are you at all anywhere near getting it, right? Can't even coach you until you really start to deal with what you want. What I have people do is I have them rate their life against that dream currently,
mm-hmm.
right? And then explain why they gave it that rating, and then explain what they think is between them and fulfilling on that dream like it was a 9 or 10.
Okay.
It's profound because I lay it out that way, a person then is writing all their drama out of their head.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I can't have it because this has to happen first. Like, all their logic, their drama, all the stories that they tell themselves, I swear to bejesus, ends up brilliant laid out like a map you can fix.
Yeah.
And that's just the first section. The second section, do you want to hear all these?
Well, no, that's good. So the 12 areas are self, body, love, spirituality, career, money, time, home, family, friends, fun and adventure, and community contribution.
Yeah.
So yeah, that feels pretty thorough in terms of covering the gamut of life. Mm-hmm. And so you map it out, you got a score, and then what comes next?
There's two more sections to just kind of pull up everything. But if you were just working on that section, the next thing you do is I would teach you some concepts, right? Like some important concepts. One, most people never write good dreams.
Mm.
Right. Most dreams are, I finally meet a man I can trust.
All right.
And you can hear in every sentence, there are cavities.
Cavities.
I'll do a little sidebar. So when I explain what I do for a living in a funny, my sort of way, I say, oh, I'm a spiritual accountant. I'm coming to do your book.
Okay.
After I'm a spiritual accountant, I'm then a spiritual lawyer. I will put you on the right contracts so that you really fulfill on the life you want. And then from time to time, I need to be a spiritual dentist. You have cavities, right? Or, oh my God, you need a root canal on that thing.
Mm-hmm. Right? And nobody's so, flossing.
No, everyone's just building up more of whatever is the same, that they do that in that area. Other areas, great. And then other areas, not so great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you dream and you dream well.
Yes. And you rate yourself and then you start to say everything that you think is between you and that and your success. And what you will find riddled in all of your language are theories that you have. I can't have this till I have that. The relationship I have with my father is this way is because, right? So all the problems are laid out really well there. And then a whole bunch of process, like work to do step by step on how to figure out where you're either being about something, okay, where you're absolutely a coward. You made it up in your head. You're scared of them. You won't tell them the truth, blah, blah. Like there's a reason that it is that way. And it's fear-based, especially when I was teaching at MIT, everyone would talk to their advisor, right? Like everyone was, you know, like they were so behind. They didn't know it. Like there were people that just were like too scared to have any conversations about truth about what was going on. Right. So fear, and then you live in your head and then you turn the other person into a bully. Right. So that's a lot of what's happening in people's like there's a chicken running loose. The other one is a brat, right? You think you know yourself and you can't stop eating junk food at night. Mm-hmm. Right. You can't go to bed earlier. You can't go to the gym. Like all of the ways you go, you can't. You've always been this way. You've never been good at it. That pretty much is the voice of the brat in your head. And if I made you stop, which I do in the book or in the method, and actually write down your inner dialogue and really start to hear it like it's not you, it's the voice in your head, it's the brat, it's the chicken, you start to separate from your patterns. And you start to hear them and see how you fall for them and see how they get you a cookie in bed and don't go for that job. Don't, you know, come home and really meditate. This is all how you break into your mind.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. All right. Well, so then your book, maybe it's you. You are sort of unpacking this and tell us what's behind the title here.
So what happened is I'm a client, right? Is every time I had a revelation, right before I had the revelation, I had this point happen. Oh, maybe it's me. Right. So the tagline, maybe it's me, it changed everything for me. It's been my joke for when something good happens that I take credit for, maybe it's me. Or when something terrible is happening, maybe it's me. Right. And then the joke is maybe, and then it's me. And then from that moment forward, you can do something about it.
Okay. I'm with you. Well, so I'd love to dig in, you know, precisely in the zone of career and work. What do you think are some of the tools or takeaways from the book that are most helpful and applicable for folks who want to be awesome at their jobs?
I do an incredible amount in my career in executive coaching and being in companies. So I know plenty. So what so many people are difficult conversations, like they don't know how to frame them. They don't know how to address upsets. They don't know how to really move through a conversation in a way that doesn't scare the poopy out of them. And so they avoid doing it, like whoever's above them, or even being able to have a difficult conversation with someone you're managing. So if you go, where's my secret sauce in the book for people in corporations or in a business setting, you really need to figure out how to step by step go through having very difficult conversations. I show examples, right? So I think that's incredible because people get stuck in their lives and their relationships and they really think they just are going to do workarounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Right. I'll just get over that. I just won't talk to them about that. I just can't like.
Yeah. Or I'll just leave this job.
They leave the job.
Yeah.
And no one understands that having a great conversation is really like changes the odds of your doomed theory. It like instantly goes, you know, I could convince a person it's 50-50. It could go either way, right? They were going, it was 100% a disaster. And just even recognizing it goes to 50-50.
Okay.
Right. Then you start to think about how important are you? What is really the matter? What are you trying to fix? Is this in the best interest of the business? Is anyone embarrassed? Like, that's all the chicken, right? All the reasons we won't have a conversation because we think we know what the other person's going to do or say.
Okay. Yeah, then that's great. Bumping your odds up from, I'm certain this will be terrible to flip a coin. It might be terrible. And that's a huge upgrade right there in moments.
And then starting to build the courage to have any conversation is leadership. And then if you see how I teach you how to frame it, right? You don't come in accusing, you come in saying what your thoughts are and where you're stuck. It's so easy to change a dynamic and leave someone else happy to tell you what they think versus mortified you said that. Mm-hmm. And so there's dynamics as you are in the book, you'll read like all the real conversations, scary ones that I made people have, right? You know, they really have them.
Okay. So let's talk about the framing and the step-by-step for how one engages in this and builds the courage capacity to do it repeatedly.
Yes. So what happens is there's usually true skimming. I don't want to tell my boss that when he's late for these things and then he still expects me to hand them in on time, it really screws me up. He never apologizes. He never says anything about it. He doesn't even seem like he notices. And then I have to work on a weekend.
All right.
And he's done this to me 3 times and he never says thank you.
Okay.
Okay. That's a good one. Right. So the issue are like, I don't feel acknowledged or appreciated and he takes advantage of my time. Right. And doesn't even realize he's doing it.
Yeah. That's great. It's funny. The fear always, it's already profit up. I imagine myself in that scenario. Experiencing that, imagining the prospect of having this conversation and then all of the terrible ways it can go in terms of, well, hey, Pete, you know, it's called work for a reason. Everyone's working hard.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are things outside our control. I need you to put on your big boy pants and deal with it and be a team player here.
Yep.
You know, it's sort of like, I will be changing nothing. Thank you very much. Sort of like what I initially fear is going to be how it's received on the other side.
Yes. One of the things I have people really confront in the book is how much they're running a puppet show where you're in your head, you're running conversations and you don't even realize you're answering their answers. And then you keep strategizing.
Yeah.
And you never understand that's insane. That's actually not true. It's Barbies. Right? You're playing Barbies in your head and you think you know other people. How could you possibly have a real experience with that person if you really are always running a Barbie relationship with them in your head? You leave them and you start quarterbacking. You call your 2 friends. You have a discussion about what the discussion was.
Yeah.
We are running puppet shows and it's so much better to actually have a real relationship with someone where you are authentic and actually share what's going on in that head of yours. And as long as you're not combative and actually accusatory or it puts the other person on defense, you'd be amazed. That's the beginning of actually different personalities, different needs, different work relationships. And most people really want good working relationships. Or to go, that's not happening, let's create a workaround. I am that person. You're right. I'm sorry. It's going to be that way. Okay. What do you need then?
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Like everything can get resolved because everybody's already living with the worst case. So it's only getting better from here.
Oh, that's nice. There you go.
Right. That's the ultimate truth. Right. Is like, it's only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I would have this person do is figure out that. I have to talk about something and I've noticed, like, I'm scared to tell you, like, so you admit your feelings, right? Like you admit, like, I'm scared to tell you and I really want this for well. And so, I just wanted to say that, right? So I'm a little nervous to tell you this. Okay. And the reason I'm nervous is because I've been a bit upset about something and haven't mentioned it to you. So one, I'm sorry I didn't bring it up when it first happened.
Okay.
Right. And so you didn't even have a chance at all to fix it with me and, or to even know. And so I'm really telling on myself that I was upset about something and it's happened a few times and now I'm having the courage to come clean.
You know, what's really cool about that is that already if I'm on the receiving end of that, I'm like, oh, what have I done? I really did something terrible, you know, and there's suspense. And so then when you release it, it's like, oh, okay, well, we can work with that. It's not so terrifying, right. You know.
Yes. And you also want to be a good guy. Like, I set you up to want to take care of me.
Yeah.
See that? Like, oh, and I'm already calling myself a jerk. Like, not you, but me. Like, I didn't tell you, so you couldn't have done anything about it. I should have said something. Right. So the issue is not that it happened. It's that I didn't say something or address it when it happened, and I'm putting all responsibility on me.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. And then the next part is, there's this thing that's happened a couple times, which is, you know, that report I owe on, like, on Mondays, right? It's due on Thursdays, and you get it to me usually around 3:30 on Friday, so that I don't get to work on it till the weekend, or, right? So it ends up putting me, cause I totally want to hand it in to you on at 9 a.m. on Mondays, but because you get it to me late, it's really messing my time off. And so I never said anything, and I just want you happy, and I still want to keep you happy. I actually have solutions if you want, right?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. If you want to hand it, you know, so if you're giving it to me on 3:30 on Friday, I would like to be able to get it to you by 1 o'clock on Monday or 4 o'clock on Monday, whatever is actually the right answer, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever based on my, so switch the timeline. Or if you want it on that time, can I get it no later than 3? I need it on Thursday. How can I help you get that? What should we do? Mm-hmm. So this is everything I haven't been saying. This is why I haven't said it, but I have to do something about it. So what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And then just flip the ball back to the boss, and the boss will fix it and take care of you, and is set up to take care of you. So every conversation, right, there's framing what you need to take response, me. Like, what could I have done differently? I'm not a victim of this person. I'm having a full blown relationship with them. Like, I could do anything in this relationship. There's no like power where I'm not allowed to talk or ask or say something or bring up a deadline or wonder about something. And so people are really cowards when it comes to power.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then they'll have that one example where someone yelled at them or that someone got mad. And then they'll use that to always remind them never to the full truth.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to learn how to communicate better mm-hmm. that we teach. Like, it's awesome. It's a wild west.
And so if you do get the worst case scenario, what then?
You eat crow, right? You take it, right? So if the worst case scenario is, I cannot believe you're coming in here and discussing what you do on the weekend and what it takes for you to get your job done. And you're not going to talk to me about when I get you that report. Like, are you kidding? You'll do your job and you'll have it to me Monday at 9, right? And I don't want to hear about this again. Okay, well, all right. That will never happen again. I got it. I am to work, and whenever you get to me, I will get it done. I'm sorry if this, you know, but, you know, offended you. It seems like I offended you in some way, and I got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So always address if someone's angry or off too. Not to go, are you mad at me? Like, oh, I'm sorry. I guess this upset you, right? So you're like, you just always take, you absorb what's going on in the room. You always acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
Is somebody unhappy in here? When you call out the space can shift. All of these things are dynamics amongst people, learning how to interact better, right? With understanding what's going on and how to use the truth.
Right.
And your personality well.
Yeah. And with that understanding, you're now actually in a better place, even though you may feel like, oh, I've lost some status or respect or whatever with boss. You're in a better place because you now have some wisdom. It's like, okay, well, this is where it stands. And now I can make an informed decision in terms of, all right, so weekends, just how critical are they to me? And is this the right role for me? It's been clearly defined what this expectation is. And now I'm going to think through if that's optimal and workable for me, given all my options.
Exactly. What a person should always be doing, right? Mm-hmm. And then whatever values you have about work, right? Like, it has to be fun. It has to give me my lifestyle. Like, people need to also figure out their serious criteria for an experience at work, just like you would want in your love life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the, you know. And so people are always compromising in ways that are really soul crushing.
Okay.
Soul crushing. Right. And then they don't believe they can change, like really make a plan and get out. Like that's another thing famous for is it helps you make a real plan. So you're designing your life.
Right. Okay. Well, so in your book, you've got a few other concepts that are intriguing. Can you share with us, what do you mean by our emotional DNA?
I study lineage. In science, they've been calling it epigenetics. The way I make it get it is you don't just have your father's blue eyes. You have his wandering blue eyes, right? And, you know, so your father was a cheater of some sort, right? Like your emotional DNA is just as built in as your physical DNA, which is a radical thing to, you know, because we would like to go, oh, well, my dad was an addict. No wonder I have an addict tendency. And it kind of just explains some things. And genetics explain physical. The only emotion, you know, they're starting to, you know, they do go bipolar. Maybe that's why you are, right? But the world of all of, like, that's the only places they look, right? Like mental illness a little, right? But what if all of your behaviors are really not just, like, they're genetically and behaviorally impacting you, right? Because of how you were raised, and because of your parents, and because of your lineage, and because of the two divorces your mom had, and because of your father's money issues, right? So the more you understand your parents, the more you understand the lineage, the depth in the culture, like it, you, male, female, all those dynamics are utterly shaping you. And so so what happens in the method is you literally start with your parents, see yourself, right? Like through dates of all your parents. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Okay.
And so knowing that, what do you do?
Well, so when you figure out, so for example, my father still is a lawyer, but he's a high powered, ran a law firm, 30-year-old running a big law firm in Manhattan, kind of a guy. Right. And really young, I sound. I think I sound like my father. Right. Are you kidding? And so, and then if you go in a little deeper, my father could be incredibly stubborn, right? Because I said definitely his better line. Right. And then you get a kiddo at the end. Right. So one of my way. Right. And I'm not allowed to do that. And you could give I'm married to that person. You want to be married to that person? My husband does not. So, for example, there is a control. And so I have promises about that I'm just not allowed to do that, right? I at all. And I teach promises, very funny consequences around my whole family about rules I need so that I'm not bossy mommy, right? At all. And I'm not. And it's so much fun when you don't want to be that trait like your father's or your mother's or any of those things. You can liberate yourself by knowing it or making fun of it. A sense of humor is critical. And coming up with a promise that really does counteract it.
Mm-hmm. And so you talk a lot about keeping promises to yourself. What are some of the best practices to do that with great consistency?
People can keep people much easier because they're in it if you don't. Promise that's already inherent in the relationship. But when it comes to keeping promises yourself, we suck because blew off the gym. Like it just doesn't impact you the same way. Blow off picking up as you would blow off going to the gym.
Now, Lauren, in the book, you also mention how we often don't keep our promises to ourselves. How does that work and how can we do it better?
So we're good at keeping promises to others or so good, much better usually. And then the places where you're having any difficulty, you're not great. Most people are not good at keeping promises to themselves for a variety of reasons, right? But so you want to break out, and what you're really developing is what I call personal integrity, an ability to keep a promise to yourself that you want to keep. But, you know, if you're already not keeping it and it's an area that's hard to keep, you will need what I put right in is a promise plus a consequence. And not in your little head. It has to be public. Someone knows about it. So you even have a buddy or like someone's holding you accountable. So how this works, for example, is I wanted to take on a meditation practice, right? And there is no way I was going to, like, unless I had a consequence, me meditating twice a day was just never going to happen, right? It almost was comical, right? But the minute I go, so before I get my cup of coffee in the morning, I have to meditate. And before I get any screens at night, I have to meditate, or no screens or no coffee. Very simple, right? So will I die if I don't get coffee? I might get a headache, but I will not die. And will I die if I don't get screens at night? Not even a little. So a consequence is actually going after one of your vices. It's literally making your dark work for good.
Okay.
And then if I really want to keep a promise, I need a consequence, I need a timeline, and I need someone who benefits. Like will follow up with me and make sure I'm really keeping my promise, right? I owe the money. I always do money. I never like to part with, $20 to someone. So if I want to make sure I do something, I'm like, I'll give you $20 if I don't go by Tuesday.
Okay.
Right? Because I ain't go, I'm not taking my shoes to get fixed, except I really want my shoes fixed, right? But I will blow that off. Like, I'll closer throw out the shoes than just go take them and get them fixed. Right. So I need promises for my, lazy behaviors.
Okay. That seems like a simple way to do it. Cool.
Yes.
And furthermore, you say that we lie to ourselves or to others in many different shades, even if we don't think we do. How's that work?
So one of the most important things that happens throughout the homework through the method is really sorting out how we lie. Ways we lie, why we lie, what we're lying about, who we're lying to, why we're lying to them, why we think we have to keep lying, right? And then, of course, do you think other people are always telling you the truth, right? So if if you start to go deeply into, trusting people and being honest and what that gets you, right? What happens is people think it's very scary territory, right? Because the truth can be ugly, yours or theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting to face that people, types and brands of how you lie and why you lie and what that's costing you, because most people don't really understand what it's costing them. And science even backs how much it's costing people reality, happiness, it creates stress, it makes health issues, right? It's so serious to lie. Right. And to live an imposter syndrome in your own life, with your own kids, with your own husband, with your own job. There's 7 different ways we lie that I pull out and make people do lists on. Right. And, one of the most popular one, what's the worst one no one wants to deal with, is they explain they're bad at confrontation. I'm very bad at confrontation. I really am just like this person who needs to keep everybody happy. I'm a people pleaser. I know that's my problem. I'm a people pleaser. And I go, oh, people pleaser, you understand what a people pleaser sounds like to me? What? A really serious liar. If you're keeping everybody happy, that doesn't mean you're telling the truth, does it?
Okay.
Right. So everything you're not allowed to say to someone because you're pleasing them and want to avoid confrontation.
Okay. So you're saying that the withholding itself is a form of dishonesty.
Yeah. I make a whole case for all different types of lying. Withholding information that someone thinks they should know. Mm-hmm. Right. But I didn't figure out to ask. Does that mean you're not lying? If I go, I hope you had a great day at work and you didn't really go to work. And I just walked out of the room. I didn't say it in or did, like, I just was like, you didn't bring it up again. I never said no, but that would be weird because it's misrepresenting it, right? You know that the person thinks you went to work, but you're not telling, but that's not. So I explain how all of these are ways to lie. And it's really important to understand, because that's how, remember that puppet show I was talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is how the puppets work. And this is how you never be authentic in your life. Never find your voice. Never deal with yourself. Never get relationships to work.
Yeah.
Right. Leave. This will have you never leave and stay really sedated in your happiness. Like, I accepted this. And you call it acceptance, but it's not acceptance. It's resignation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got it.
Charming, right?
Yeah. Well, Lauren, tell me anything else you do want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things.
It's, you know, my method is not for the lighthearted, right? Like for someone who wants to like not go deep, right? This goes deep and it means to go deep. I keep you laughing and doing very scary things that will change your life forever, and they don't revert, right? If you actually learn that. So, you know, when you need it, it's right there, right? Hardcore.
Cool. Good to know. Well, now can you share with us a favorite quote so that you find inspiring?
One of my favorite quotes is, "You're never too old to have a good childhood."
Hmm.
Tom Robbins.
Cool.
Yeah.
And how about a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
The epigenetics one is my favorite, all about how it's a whole story on, it's too long, on the rats. There's a whole rat story around that prove epigenetics, and then right in the babies, next generation, right there, they can prove it exists and that evolution is happening right like that. And it's, you know, it's profound.
Okay. And how about a favorite book?
Oh, I would say Tom Robbins Wins, which it's Still Life with Woodpecker.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And how about a favorite tool?
A favorite tool? I am a painter. And I make dots, actually. I dot, and I have this perfect little, I have all different sizes, but a dotter, right?
Okay.
That's my favorite tool.
And how about a favorite habit?
Painting.
And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect, to resonate with folks when you're coaching or speaking?
That they've never taken over managing their mind. Like that those thoughts in there, that the whatever that mind of yours is doing, you just don't leave things to just see how they grow, right? You shave your legs, you edit things, right? You're like, the amount of no work people are doing on the inside of that mind of theirs, you got to break in, right? So it's so easy to get a person to go, I have no idea what my mind is really, really doing for a living,
mm-hmm.
right? I know what I know I'm its bitch, but boy, oh boy, it would be nice to not be.
And if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
To my website, The Handel Group. And maybe it's you can find anywhere, you know, Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I'm sure they would appreciate you buy a copy.
Okay. And do you have a final challenge or call to action for those seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
I dare you to have one difficult conversation and frame it and figure out how to like be a leader about that. Like one dare, one conversation, one thing you're avoiding, you know, that you're upset about that you should fix, and really come clean and clear it up with the person. One. Come on, you.
Okay.
The odds that you don't have one are impossible. You do. Unless you work alone. And then you should do it with yourself.
All right. Well, Lauren, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for sharing the goods. I wish you lots of luck with the book and all you're up to here.
Thank you. And thank you for everything you're doing. I really, really, really appreciate like the network and team that's forming of people really supporting each other and being great.
I thought Lauren brought up a really great point about some of those tricky conversations with people, is that if you don't have it, you're already living in the worst case scenario. And so it will only get better. Either it will be just the same. It's like, oops, okay, had the conversation, nothing happened, but now you know where you stand. So at least it's better in that way. Or you'll see a real improvement. And if you do nothing conversationally, you get nothing. So that's a nice reframe there in terms of finding the courage to go there and have that conversation, which can be transformative. So again, if you want to check out the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we've referenced, it's at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep325. And I hope you'll push subscribe. If you haven't already, you'll hear from our next guest. It is Doris Savron. She's given pro tips on how to make the most of online education opportunities. Hope to catch you there. Peace.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. To get the most out of this conversation, visit awesomeatyourjob.com to find today's show notes, transcript, and infographic summary cheat sheet. For more entertaining professional skill sharpening, be sure to subscribe to catch the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.